fall behind me now.
This is the Retro Computing Roundtable, show 17.
Part 2.
From the aspect that sometimes people who are very technical are not very good at either written or verbal communication, yet because their minds are just, you know, so technically oriented. But I thought one of the reasons that book in particular was so influential was because it was so well done. You could go through the book and, by gosh, you knew how to program in C.
Mm-hmm. It's undaunting. It's not scary.
Mm-hmm. And that's approachable.
That's important.
Mm-hmm. So,
and just to tie it, bring it around too. I mean, Mac OS X, next step, has a Unix. What core is that? Would that be a correct way of phrasing it? Or
it all ties back, doesn't it?
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And Objective C is a strict superset of the C programming language that mm-hmm, everybody's right. programming all these apps in. I mean, right. It's amazing when I think about the progeny of C. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got C++, obviously, the object-oriented variant that is worldwide and massive. Microsoft's .NET variant, C#, which is strongly based off the syntax of C.
Yeah.
Objective-C that, early on in the object-oriented world, an extension of C. And even Java, if you look at Java not from a framework perspective, but just from the code syntax perspective, it is really, really similar to the C programming language.
Certainly C-derived, definitely. And, you know, your every device, I mean, I'm looking across the room here at some of the few devices that are not at least 20 years old. And, you know, I've got routers, I've got smart switches, cable modem. They're all running Linux, which is, you know,
derivative, is that the right word? Or
Derivative of it's a star NIX. Even though OS X is an actual official Unix, they're all certainly derivatives. And, I mean, I'm sure one of our watches is probably running Unix in some form, but
I added an article, so for anybody to check out in the show notes, it's a pretty interesting read. It's called "Was Dennis Ritchie More Important Than Steve Jobs?" And good article though.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. It's not one that I wanted to pose on this particular podcast because I thought, that's a really difficult question to answer because it's different perspectives, but both involved in the foundation of computing. So
it has a good sort of not that it's a trick article or anything, but I think it kind of ties up the article pretty well at the end. It's not really bashing anybody or anything. And you know, one thing I want to raise too is, you know how is it Hollywood or whatever, when people die and they always, there's this old saying about it comes in threes or whatever.
Yeah, I know.
That's not the case in tech.
Didn't want that to happen. I thought about that too.
Mm. Yeah, when Dennis Ritchie died, though, that's one of the things I thought of, you know, which I'm not superstitious.
Right. Watch out, Larry Ellison.
Oh, no.
Or maybe Woz, you know.
Oh. No, I think it's more likely to be Bill Gates, and everyone will make, God, they can't stop copying him jokes.
Gotta go for a salad.
Yeah, exactly. Watch that cholesterol, guys.
Yeah, I know, right?
In 67.
Yeah,
so yeah, Dennis Ritchie, rest in peace. And again, I'll say for the second time in the show, thanks for the contributions, because the foundation of modern computing owes a lot to him. Now on to some more topics here, you know, some lighter weight topics, I think. Carrington, why don't you tell us about John Romero being the keynote speaker?
While we were talking on the podcast.
That's not true, guys.
This podcast of doom. Do not get mentioned on this podcast. Yeah, no, really, really exciting announcement from the Kansas Fest committee. Next year's Kansas Fest, 2012, the keynote speaker will be John Romero. So that was a surprise and a big name announcement. You probably know him if you're into gaming at all. You will know this guy, mostly for, you know, Wolfenstein 3D and just, you know, being a coder for ages and ages and ages. So really, really exciting that he's going to be coming in and doing the keynote for Kansas Fest next year. When another good reason to go. I mean, he's got a long history with the Apple II. And so it's going to be really exciting to hear what he has to say. I believe he's bringing his current partner, Brenda Brathwaite, I think her name is. I can't remember. I think she's coming as well. So also a coder. So should make for a really interesting and also somewhat contentious keynote, because it's not as if everything has been wonderful with his history in gaming and even his history with the Apple II and stuff like that. So, but a really interesting fellow with a deep catalog of interesting titles. And I think he'll have a lot to say. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Do you know, does this mean, I've never gone to Kansas Fest, and each year I get I toy with the idea and I get closer and closer, and this coming year was the first year I was, possibly going to actually make the jump. Does this mean that it's already too late? I mean, does it sell out?
It hasn't, not even open for joining yet. Maybe months from now, you actually get tickets.
Actually, you raised a good question, though, Blake. I wonder, because of John Romero, I wonder if this will be like the biggest one ever.
It's probably going to be a lot of media.
Steve Wozniak gave the keynote a few years ago, and that was big. The attendance has been trending downward, generally, for the last 20 years or something like that, but the last few years has been trending up. So it's getting more and more popular again. The last few years have increased. But it's not like 2,000 people go to this event. It's held at a university. I've gone twice now. This year was the second time that I've attended. I had a crazy blast both times. One of the best things of the year to go and do if you like retro computing. I cannot express how much fun it is. And
you seem pretty giddy when we talk to you.
It is. It's just, it's amazingly fun. Like just the people, the atmosphere, the stuff you do there, it's crazy fun.
And you're definitely going?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, 100% going to go again this year or next year. Mm-hmm. Really excited about the keynote. I'm just hooked on this event.
July 17th to July 22nd.
Yeah, I've already got it in my calendar. And since it's held at a university and you stay if you stay on the event, you stay in the university campus in a dorm, there's tons of room. Like I honestly think it could, have 6-7 times the attendees and still accommodate it. So it's really not the sort of event I think that would sell out. I'm definitely going. Cannot wait.
I gotta go.
This year though will be the first year I'm hell-bent on entering Hackfest. One of the events that goes on while you're there is a challenge to write a full piece of code for the Apple II system, you can't start ahead of time. You got to do it all at Kansas Fest and have it finished by the end. And I really want to do that this year. So, bouncing around ideas.
So, you're going to be packing in the Red Bull?
Yes. I don't know how. I'd like to present again. This year, I didn't really do anything. I just went and attended. The first year I went, I did a session. So, I'd like to do at least one, maybe two sessions and do in Hackfest. I really want to throw myself into the event this year or next
year. You did a podcast.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, but that wasn't really
open megahertz.
Well, two. Megahertz and RCA.
Oh yeah,
I heard it.
I just didn't have to do anything for that. It was just sit down and talk.
I've got that photo. I've got the photo from the cover on my wall printed out. It's like a 4x4 foot photo of you three.
Yes, I remember when we took that photo. I was like, hey, let's do this, guys.
Earl, do you think you might be able to make it? What do you think?
Man, I'm saving my pennies. I really, really want to because, Ken Gagne's been trying to get me out there for years.
Because you guys know what we were talking about before the show. We could maybe shoot for that.
That'd be
July.
Awesome.
That would be an awesome get-together. Yeah, let's talk about that. So I'd like to do a smooth segue to the good version of Donkey Kong on the Intellivision, but I can't. So, Carrington, tell me about the good version of Donkey Kong on the Intellivision.
What a smooth segue that was.
Isn't that beautiful?
Well, a bit of history. So as you may know, if you're an old Intellivision fan, Coleco put out what most people consider a deliberately bad version of Donkey Kong for the Intellivision. And it was a way to sort of promote how much better their own system, the ColecoVision, was. Look at how much better the graphics are, etc. But there's a homebrew version of Donkey Kong called Donkey Kong Arcade that's just come out for Intellivision. It's currently sold out, but they're going to be doing more inventory. And it's fantastic. I haven't played it yet. I've only seen the videos, but the videos make it look fantastic. And it really is the version of Donkey Kong that should have been released and should have been initially developed for the Intellivision. So if you're a fan of Donkey Kong and a fan of the Intellivision, and if not, I want to know why not, this seems like a must-buy. Like it looks like a fantastic version. I'm quite
crazy? I mean, that they can make a new version and with the cartridge and everything?
I know, and that's the thing.
But they get the parts and stuff.
I love homebrew stuff. The Atari has a great homebrew scene right now, and the television has a very good one.
Absolutely.
As well. It doesn't seem as big as the 2600. But
yeah. No, the 2600 stuff is going crazy. Somebody at the Retro Gaming Expo bought a cartridge that you can put an SD card in and just have dozens and dozens of 2600 games all in one. And, you know, a lot of it's homebrew.
Maybe
I mean, a lot of it's the old stuff from the past, but a lot of it's homebrew, too. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
I guess I'm ignorant of the parts, and so maybe I don't need to be that impressed by it. But, like, where do you get the...
No, it
is
impressive.
And the, yeah, just, I mean, forget the game, which is awesome, and that's the cool mm-hmm. part. But, I mean, the cartridge, you know, the supplies to make the cartridges and the edge connectors that go in there. Where do you get that stuff? Someone still makes that?
Someone has to fabricate a board, yeah. Someone's got to fabricate a board.
So like any other board, you can just make one, I guess, right?
I'm going to go with yes.
That's what you said.
Yeah, no, you can, but like you say, you got to get the molded
yeah.
case thing
well,
that's interesting. All of that stuff, so...
I got big into, there's Vectrex. You guys remember the Vectrex?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I finally picked up a Vectrex. Well, finally, I picked it up like 5 years ago. But I got a couple of those cartridges. You know, like I think it was Earl that mentioned. You know, the SD card cartridges. And yeah, you know, I've got like a huge number. And one of the best game on it is like this. It's a homebrew. It's a remake of the. I guess it was originally Commodore 64 Gravity Game Thrust. I don't know if anyone's ever
sure.
played it, but yeah, and it's like by far the best version I've ever seen, and it's a totally homebrew thing and its own cartridge and good stuff. Yeah, people do that stuff. There's a $1,000 Atari Jaguar cartridge out there. I can't remember the name of it. It's a space game. It goes for over $1,000 on eBay. Like they only made like 200, and you see one like every 6 months, and people
crazy.
Pay like $1,200.
What's it called? Because
Galactosphere or Magnosphere or something.
Inherited a
Battlesphere. Oh, I think it's Battlesphere.
I have to go see if I have that.
Yeah. No, I doubt
that'd be a nice find, wouldn't it?
Which case you're going against Vest.
Yeah, those Vectrexes are awesome. Sean from the Commodore Computer Club brings his to the club meetings sometimes and puts it on the row of gaming machines that we got going there. Those things are just...
I mean, the
vector graphics is so cool. It's visually unlike anything else, mm-hmm. wouldn't you say?
I was a big fan of vector graphics arcade games back in the day.
Me too.
I love them. Battlezone and stuff? Tempest, yeah, totally.
The Battlezone, yeah.
And
Nature Havoc,
yeah.
What's the one with the... where it goes in a circle, you know, and they're coming up at
Tempest.
You. Tempest, yeah.
Tempest,
yeah.
Which features big in the book that I think I talked about last time, Ready Player One. There's a Tempest part in that. Really good book. I'm still recommending
it. It seemed like every pizza joint had a Tempest.
Pizza joints should have Tempests.
Still today,
mm-hmm.
I think they should.
If I had a pizza joint, I'd have a Tempest game. And a Discs of Tron total cabinet. It'd be awesome.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely.
That's a rare one.
Well, even going back a little bit further, say a smoother segue this time.
Nice.
At Bletchley Park over in the UK, there is on display, some reproduction, a reproduction, of a computer that dates all the way back to World War II. And I won't belabor this particular topic, but we'll have a link.
They built it a couple of years ago, didn't they? This isn't like...
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean...
Okay.
It's really interesting, though, that they had to scrounge around for old engineers' notes and photographs and
Lots.
Going from people's memories. And yeah, I mean, this is a long time ago. Not only that, but the interesting thing is that, this news article on this was in August. So I'm looking to see when they actually got done with this reproduction. This one's called the Tunny, and it was a code cracking machine.
It's a different one.
Yeah, that it's mechanical in nature, helped to crack the German encrypted transmissions,
mm-hmm.
and
Enigma.
Amazingly difficult to build. And when I see stuff like this, and I'm sitting around poking on a Commodore 64, or even the PET or my HX20 laptop, some of the older things in my collection, I think, man, this stuff, these guys have street cred. If they want to call out retro, because it's amazing stuff. And not just from the computing standpoint, but the historical standpoint. You know, what a gift to be able to see a modern day reproduction of something that was so historically significant. from back then. So take a look at the article. They've got good photographs. You know, they talked to some of the folks involved here. I think it's just really cool stuff.
Very cool. Yeah, the wiring's amazing. You see those wiring bundles in the pictures? Everybody mm-hmm. needs to check those out.
Mm-hmm.
And last on the news list for today, Carrington, you had something here about a classic Mac game you wanted to talk about.
Oh, yeah, a couple of them, actually. Glider, which was an old Mac game, has recently come out for the iOS. And I believe there was a review on some sort of iOS gaming site. I don't know.
Mm. I heard that too.
Did you hear that rumor? So, so what did you guys think of it? Like, I was a big fan of the original game, and I'm a big fan. It's a pick it up and play for a couple of minutes sort of game on the mm-hmm. iPhone, and I really mm-hmm. dig it.
Yeah, no, it's I guess it was I came in and out of the Mac over the, you know, 80s and 90s, and I wasn't right there when Glider was like at the heyday, but I certainly played it, and you know, it had a certain simple charm. You know, it was just a simple game, and so what I actually talked to John Calhoun, who you know, was the original developer. He put it out of shareware in 88. And there were like three or four versions of it, you know, Glider 2, 3, 4. I think there was a 4. And then he went and marketed it through Cassidy and Green mm-hmm. as Glider Pro, which I think is on the PC also. You know, that was a commercial title. And actually, Glider Pro, the public and you know, John himself feel that it kind of went a little far afield. As far as kind of how the game was paced. And so the definitive versions are really the pre-pro versions. And the iOS version is based on kind of a combination of all the pre-pro versions, but it's got the nice music from the pro. And so it's really certainly a best of. And what he, John Calhoun posted a blog post about how he, you know, the graphics are reinvented, but he drew them himself on paper and he would scan them in and he would take them through a two-color Photoshop process. So they, none of the, you know, sprite graphics are any more than two colors, but they're nicely, you know, halftone dithered. And so he took a real effort to, you know, preserve the simplicity, make it look nice. You know, he's not trying to make a, you know, like a Quake 5 looking game. And I think he did a great job of kind of capturing a quick play version mm-hmm. of, you know, what it is to play Glider. And, you know, it's, yeah, we've got all this powerful, ridiculous hardware now, but, you know, Glider, it ran on those old machines and it's still a great game. And
it's
so,
$0.99. I think it's totally a good yeah. value. It's a pick up oh, yeah. and play sort of game to have on you when you're in line someplace, just fly a little paper plane. I think it's a real mm-hmm. buy for less than a buck.
Yeah, it's an awesome game.
We also have in the notes another thing that I came out a little before this that I played and loved, both early Mac version, and it was also on the Amiga, and now I've played it again on my iPad, which is what you Americans call Out of This World, but the rest of us call Another World, one of my all-time favorite classic Mac games. And I love the version that's come out for iOS.
So you played it on the Mac?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yep.
I did too.
Yeah. Why was there a different name for the US release than
I think other that there was some kind of a copyright issue. I can't remember exactly, but there was
it
a
was,
reason
yeah.
they couldn't call it Another World.
Either it was like a movie or a TV show or something like that.
So well, there was yeah, that TV show.
Daytime serial, Another World.
Oh, right, maybe.
Yeah, might have been that. There was some sort of thing, and that's why the US got a different version.
Wow. Yeah, another the game is so much better than that daytime serial ever could have been.
Yes.
It's ridiculous.
And but, I love it on the iPad. I think it's a fantastic game.
Yeah, we actually, just briefly, we reviewed that. I reviewed it, and I actually did a phone interview with Eric, and we were debating how to pronounce his last name, Eric Chachi. Chachi, yeah. And he, you know, he wrote the game back in the early 90s, and you know, they brought it to iOS with the help of .emu, which is a I'm close with those guys. They are a studio in France that does a lot of emulation and recreation games, like you know, Amiga and arcade games. They bring them to iOS, but they did a great job. The controls are great, and we gave it 5 stars. You know, like it's an absolute must buy. I think it's $4.99. And later, like I've chatted since a few times with Eric, and you know, kind of an interesting story is back in 91 when they made it, he had a limited run of these lithographs of the oil. He was sort of an artist other than a code artist, than a game design artist, and he painted in oil, the cover of Another World. It's an exceptional exceptional scene, exceptional piece of art. And he had like seven of these things left, and he sent me one of the lithographs, which is now out, having it it's being framed. But I mean, that's without question, you know, my most prized, certainly my most prized work of art, but it's maybe the most prized thing that's down in this computer room.
That is, you know, awesome.
Yeah, no, it's this rare thing, and he, you know, he was pleased with my apparent enthusiasm for the game, you know, talking to him, and you know, so that's just exceptional. And I'll post on BiteCellar. I'll certainly post a photo when I, you know, when I get it back and get it hung up. But yeah, so that was just a thrill, and he's just an exceptionally pleasant fellow to talk to. He, you know, it's great to see, you know, that game getting in the hands of so many new gamers that just never, you know, never even heard of it before. So. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, really, really fun retro game. If you played it back in the day, there's a lot of nostalgia factor here. But even if you hadn't, I think it holds up. I love the rotoscoped graphics. I like the look of it. I like the feel. I like the whole, you know, story arc of the game. It's, you know, it's $4.99, I think, on the iTunes store. And again, a total buy. Like, it's such a good game.
Very immersive.
Yeah, and great controls, and just fantastic. Plays so well on the iPad.
Yep.
Now, one thing I didn't know, I always thought back in the day that Flashback was related to this game. That's another Mac game. Yeah. In fact, I thought Flashback was like a sequel because they both had that rotoscope look and all that sort of thing, both published by, I think they're both published by Delphine. So,
Delphine.
Yeah, so the same sort of cover look and stuff. But they actually, I guess, had nothing to do with each other.
Unrelated, yeah. They both had a similar sort of mechanism. I'll... For total transparency, it was only about 2 years ago that I learned that it was not a sequel. Yeah, there is a sequel to Another World, and
Heart of the Alien or something.
Yes, Heart of the Alien. Yeah. But yeah, they came out. Everyone thought that. I mean, they came out like one came right after the other. It looked similar, but same publisher. But no, they didn't have anything to do with each other.
Both games I liked a lot. I would like it if Flashback also came to the iOS. But Another World definitely is a buy. It's fantastic.
Flashback is on iOS. It was early. Yeah, it came out like a few years ago.
It's
it was
like
one
a
of the early
gift
ones.
To me. He said, going off there to download it right now.
Yeah, yeah.
See the things you learn here.
I learned so much. I can be taught.
And stuff, good stuff.
Guess what?
Well,
I just
let's move on to what?
What?
Oh,
I'm not disrupting things. Am I messing up the flow? I hope I'm not.
No, not at all. We have flow. No flow. You're giving us flow.
too much credit. Well, okay.
But we do need to move on to the eBay auctions only because
it's a 2-hour show.
Yeah, we got it. So what I'm going to ask, you know, maybe move a little quicker on the previous eBay auctions this time. Maybe just tell us how'd it do, and if you have some thoughts in like 25 words or less about the auction, so we can move on to the new stuff that we've got on the block for this time. So, Carrington, your electric three-wheel custom car, which is the weirdest thing, and that's saying something, that you've ever put on your auction picks.
But I think I have a good track record with my auction picks. They might be weird, but mine always sell. And this one sold for $2,000, wow. I think it was. And I think it had, I don't know, a bunch of bids, 20 bids, something like that. I haven't looked at it in a while.
20.
Yep.
Impressive. Yeah,
so electric three-wheel hand-built car with an Apple IIc in the dashboard. Who doesn't want that?
I don't see how you get much more retro than that. We're much more cool.
Totally.
Mm. So, I'll say, if I could just poke in real quick, after I heard about that on the last show, I spent about 2 hours digging through my magazines because I know that I read a story in the 80s about that situation. In one of the computer magazines, I could not find it, but I spent 2 or 3 hours looking for that thing and searching on the web, and I wish I could have found it. I know it was written up, but I didn't find it. So.
Yeah, so anybody who has seen it before, email us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And if you come across that, like, let us know. We'll definitely get that up on the show.
Definitely.
My item also sold, I'll have you know, the Hewlett-Packard 21MX, the 1000 Series M mini computer. And it's not surprising to me that this thing sold because it's just in absolutely beautiful condition. The photographs that they have here It's gorgeous, and if you were into this particular computer model line, this would be a pristine museum piece for you. So, so David, what happened with your Lisa?
Oh, see, it sold too. I was just looking at your HP here. I wondered, did that sell for the buy it now, was it? But anyway, you may look it up if you want. Let's see, the Lisa, I think it sold for, what, $279.77, which is, I think was a deal. The fact that the thing powered on, even though it's missing a keyboard, is it's easily worth that at this point.
Hmm.
So 12 bids. When you
is
guys say?
Yeah.
I paid $1,000 on eBay, like it was 6 years ago. I paid $1,100 for a refurb Lisa 2 with a five meg hard drive internal. And that was like 6 years ago. It was like $1,100, and this would have been a pretty good deal at that price.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it's going to be tough finding the keyboard. Or I think Karen, you had said something about a Canadian company having some.
Well,
yeah, I'm here in Toronto. We got tons. Tons.
Wow. So that's like Mecca for Lisa keyboards.
Yeah, there's a couple of surplus places in Toronto. Toronto is a fantastic city to go surplus dumpster diving. Mm. There's two big electronic surplus stores downtown. One's a lot physically larger than the other, but they both always have interesting and quickly turning over selections of old computer bits and bobs. So if you want a keyboard for a Lisa or an Apple IIgs monitor or whatever, it's easy to come by those things in Toronto. We're very lucky that way.
Yeah, development, the Lisa's code name was actually Toronto. Not many people know that.
I did not know that.
No, that's a joke.
Named after the city? Oh, I was going to say, named after the band.
Yeah. I think his development name was Lisa.
Named after the... the rummage shops, the keyboard, Lisa keyboard shops.
Yeah. Yeah, which is kind of cyclical, if you think
yes,
about it.
Yes, it is.
Very it's much a paradox. So. So Keratin, your eBay pick for this time?
I am going with an Apple II product. Everyone is surprised. So
that is a shocker.
And this time around, I am picking a game that I'm a little hesitant to recommend, only because I have bid unsuccessfully on this game. I've got to be 3 or 4 times on eBay. I am always out.
No one bid on this. Let
everyone's
going to
bid. It's going to. It always sells for ridiculous values. But right now, it hasn't. It's a game. I'm not quite sure how it's supposed to be pronounced. I think it's pronounced Ooh Topos. Maybe it's Ah Topos. Maybe it's Ooh Topos. I don't know. OO-TOPOS. It is a text adventure game for the Apple II. This is the first edition version. So this is the one that was published by Sentient. It late a few years after this, it came out again by Polarware and had graphics added. But this is the text-only version of the text adventure, so it's the very, very first one. Currently, I think it's at $1.25. I have been outbid at very, very high bids on this game, so I suspect it's going to go for a lot more. But there's only 2.5 days left, and I haven't bid yet. Mm-hmm. But I will probably be in competition with whichever of our listeners wants to bid on this thing. I've never played it. I've always wanted to. It was written by Michael Berlin, who is one of my favorite text adventure authors. He wrote a bunch of Infocom things. He's behind, he did Suspended and Infidel, and he did Cutthroats. He is also the guy who wrote Task Times and Tonetown.
Cool.
Just a bunch of games that I totally love. Him, so it's Michael Berlin and Muffy Berlin wrote this one together. I'm not as familiar with her, whether that's his wife, I guess, and I don't know what other things she's written. Maybe she wrote all the things with him, but I know his name, and I've enjoyed every game that I've ever played that was written by this guy, and this is one of those, you know, holy grails of Apple II gaming that I've never been able to get my hands on, and I'm really looking forward to bidding against all of our listeners on this one. So, $1.25 at the moment, with $11.95 shipping to us up here in Kinect land.
David, note to self, or note to you, maybe don't publish this episode until this auction closes.
Right.
So we'll see what it goes by and whether I talk about how I happily won it or I was outbid once again by somebody who's willing to spend like $100 on this game, and I'm not.
I found a site where you can download the game,
Well, the thing is, I'm all about playing the original one. I have been recording the last few 1 megahertz things. I guess the last 4 episodes or so, I've actually used a video camera, top facing one, to do a full unboxing of the games that I've been. So I'll eventually be uploading all that stuff to YouTube or something like that. So I'm trying to capture not just the game, but also preserve a bit of the packaging and things. So I've been doing high-res scans of it all and that sort of thing.
Right,
so,
the experience.
Yeah. And it's about that full packaged experience.
I love the box.
Yeah, the box art, I was going to say, looks amazing. It looks kind of like Roger Dean art, almost like the Psygnosis artwork that that you know came later.
It looks like a cover of Omni magazine.
And it's just one of those folding thingies as well. I don't think it's an actual box on this version. It's just a little flat one would have come in a baggie, I think. But it's got the disc and it's got the instructions, so it's a complete version of this edition, which is the early one. And so I'd love to get my hands on it, but I'm sure somebody will. There's no reserve on it, so the current $1.25 is actually the winning bid at the moment. So we'll see. Anyway, that's my choice. Quite excited about this one.
Awesome. Well, we'll cross our fingers for you. David, you've got a Mac 128?
Yep. I figured,
apropos?
I just bid on Otopos, by the way, just to be goofy.
I just did a buy it now. That's mine.
No. I hate you all.
I bid $498 and it went up to $523, so obviously that was for naught.
Yeah, it's one of those games where honestly people bid $100 on this thing, whether you're thinking about it. It's crazy.
So, you really did bid.
Yeah, I just refreshed. It's up to $523.
Okay. Well, I guess.
No, you're kidding.
I decided to go with the Steve Jobs theme. So I did a search, and real quickly I'll mention. So in the show notes, you'll see that here's my item: an original Macintosh Mac 128 computer system. I also did a search for Steve Jobs. So if you just do a search for Steve Jobs, it gives you right at this moment 8,232 results. And in doing that. I would do this every so often because I do have a collection of some magazines with Steve Jobs referenced in them, books and different things. And I've noticed that the price of any magazine that has Steve Jobs on it has skyrocketed, for one thing. So take a look at that if you have a chance. But so that makes sense, right? The man died, so now everything Steve Jobs is highly more collectible. Right. In any case, there was a few original Macs in the marketplace. This one is a buy it now of $14.99 or a starting bid of $12.99 with zero bids. And I predict it's not going to sell for $1,300 or a buy it now of $1,500.
It may not sell for that much, but boy, it's a beautiful 128. I was just scanning through the pictures here. I mean, it's functional for one thing, which, I've seen one or two Mac 128s in the past, but I've never actually seen one running. I mean, they've usually just been a museum piece, more or less. And also, some of the other stuff that came along with it is here, too. So, and the case looks like it's in nice condition, too. So it may not sell for that price, but it's definitely worth a high dollar amount.
Yeah, I mean, don't claim to be a total expert. If I had to just throw out a number, I'm going to say easily $300 to $500. But I think when you start getting up to a $1,000 range, it's pretty rare to have an original box, but you tend to have the little plastic Picasso box that came with it that has the cassette and all the
keyboard and
and all the sort of the not the packing styrofoam but the other packaging stuff that came with the machine. Maybe the diskettes need to be a little bit better shape and
the cassette tape.
Yeah, definitely the cassette tape. But yeah, so I think I found another one for like $300 and something, but it'll be interesting now to see if the original Mac and some of these things are going to, the values are going to consistently go up.
But have you looked at the name of the seller on this Mac?
Oh, I think I've seen the seller before. Yeah, Wozniak.
It's Wozniak.
The 117 feedback at 100%.
Needs the money.
Yeah, I don't think so, huh?
So did any of you guys have this computer or have it at the moment, an original one?
I had one twice.
Me too. I've had like three of them over the years, but I have a 512 that
Yeah, the 512 was my first Mac. I don't have that one anymore, but I've never owned an original one.
I mean, the first one I used at work was a Mac Plus, so a couple iterations after the first one.
That was my sister's first computer.
The Mac Plus? Yep. Yeah, beautiful machine.
I love the Plus.
I've never had a 128, though.
A fat Mac can represent the original Mac, from case and everything. It's exactly the same. And then I also have the 20 megabyte serial hard drive, and you can actually do some things with a 512 with a 128. You can barely do anything with it.
Like for $99 right now, somebody's got a Fat Mac with the original box and everything, and looks in great condition. Wow. So it shows you the price difference, though, between the first model and the second model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's got to sell for more than that, though, I would
guess.
Yeah,
there's one bid at the moment. I think that was the opening bid. But the original box, it's got the original box software and everything. So that's a really nice one.
Oh, I found it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't.
It's got a system saver. It's got a bunch of things. Wow.
Well, so I'm feeling kind of outnumbered here, Blake. So help me out. You've got a Commodore item.
Yeah. Now I picked it's an odd, kind of an odd thing. It's the Amiga 1060 sidecar. And this one actually has a plus hard card. I think
that's cool.
Well, the 1060 sidecar, it came out about a year. The Amiga came out in 85. And I had a 1000 back in 85. I actually bought the first Amiga sold in the state of Virginia. I figured that out through the dealer and like ordering schedules. And so I had it early. I had an October 85. I didn't keep it very long. I kind of moved on, lack of software. But I had many other Amigas. But anyway, I remember there was a lot of anticipation for the sidecar, which was going to come out, and everyone was waiting for it. And it was so basically, it's a huge box that attaches to the side bus of the Amiga. It has a 5 1/4 inch floppy drive, and basically inside the box it's basically an 8088 PC, but not completely. It has three slots, three ISA slots. Memory, but what it lacks IO hardware, and so it uses the Amiga to do certain IO operations. You know, like the Amiga handles the display through a window, serial communication, that kind of thing. It's all handled in the Amiga hardware with software. So it's kind of hardware software patched together, which gives you an idea of how expensive hardware was, I guess, back there. If someone's going to go to the effort to, you know, program. You know, emulate the I/O portion of a PC on an Amiga, and it's a lot of development work. The thing about this one is also it has the plus hard card. So not only does it have a hard card, but it has the first hard card ever made, which was the plus. And that's interesting because, I mean, they did it right. They were like, okay, we were going to make a hard drive on a card. And so they made their own drive and they made their own card. They did everything themselves because it fits in one slot. You know, it does not veer into another slot.
Oh, nice.
So they engineered this whole thing, and it was very expensive. And then, of course, people started coming out with hard cards that would, you know, had a regular hard drive on it that would stick into the second slot, you know, and that there's no engineering involved there at all. But interestingly, Commodore would sell a 1060 sidecar with a hard drive, with a hard card in it. Now, I don't know if it was the plus or not. It probably was, but with a hard card in it, and that made this device the only hard drive solution that Commodore ever made for the Amiga 1000, because you could use the PC's hard drive on the Amiga as well in Amiga mode. It was like the PC would act as a server for the Amiga. So this emulator is the only time Commodore ever put out an Amiga hard drive for the 1000, and that's kind of cool. So I thought it had a number of things going for it, and I mean, I'd like to have one to put on. I recently got a kind of a mint A1000, and I've been having fun with it, and this would be a nice little addition to play with. Not highly practically useful, but it's an interesting piece of history. Not many were made, so you see, starting bid is $200. I don't know. I mean, I don't. It depends on what kind of collector you are. You're not going to be using it to actually, you know, play Doom 3 or anything. But it's hard to say how high that'll get. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think it's worth $200. I think.
I think so. Amiga stuff tends to go for high dollars these days, especially something like this that is a little bit more rare.
Mm-hmm. I've always been fascinated with the whole add-on, make it compatible, like on the Mac mm-hmm. Charlie.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And then the Commodore had like a, I don't know if it ever even came out for real, called a Mimic or something, where it was Apple II.
Right,
sort of thing. Box you hook up to it, and it gives
the
you
ad. The ad was like a mime.
Exactly.
I remember. It was a 2+ card chassis that would plug into the back of a Commodore 64. I remember.
Yeah, so that whole thing's always kind of fascinated me, where you add this other box, and then now you have everything.
In television, had the same thing, didn't it? We talked about a television that plugged in and gave you a Coleco or a Coleco had one that would give you a television, yeah. Something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I have one of these hard cards. I have an original compact portable, and so it has a 20-megabyte hard card in it, which of course, I guess it's, yeah, the same thing. I mean, laid out the same way.
Yeah.
Where mine does not say plus hard card like that, though, so yeah. Maybe they licensed it to other... Maybe mine's an AST, you know that? Now I think about it. Because they went on to maybe license that to AST?
Well, I mean, Plus stood out because you could not make a hard drive as thin as the ISA slot. I mean, no one did that. And so they engineered this whole thing to make it take one slot. And then, like I said, a few months later, someone came out with... They just glued a huge hard drive onto the side of a car, and they're like, well, here, we'll take up three slots.
You know what? You're right. That's the way mine is, and it takes up two slots. Yep, you're right.
Yeah. So it was. I mean, they did a lot of work. I mean, it was. I could understand the price for the Plus because they were creating their own. You know, they made everything on that thing, and that can't have been easy. But so interesting piece of history there. But,
And it says here in the Wikipedia article for them, which is in the show notes, that they were a subsidiary of Quantum.
Oh, I didn't know that, really. Interesting. Yeah.
Which,
interesting.
Of course, are well known for making hard drives for the Mac.
Sure. Quantum.
Well, so I also did an expansion chassis of sorts, except this one's a little bit further back in time, an expansion chassis for the VIC-20.
Oh, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never, ever seen one of these.
No, I never even heard of this thing before.
I was quite the VIC-20 enthusiast.
New in the box.
Yeah, this is the VIC-20 is the first computer I ever owned, and I did have a cartridge slot expansion. It wasn't a chassis, but it was just a card with some standoffs on it that you would put into the cartridge slot of the VIC-20, and then you could plug multiple cartridges into it, but it was just like a freestanding PC board. This, on the other hand, is an entire, you know, little chassis thing that you would slide the VIC-20 into, and then under the hood, you could see you take off that top piece, and you could actually put multiple cartridges in there. So if you had, say, an 8K and a 16K RAM cartridge, you know, you wanted to beef your RAM up to the maximum, or you wanted to run the programmer's aid cartridge while you had some RAM in there as well, something like that, you could do that with this box. Now, interesting thing, a lot of the aftermarket expansion boards for the VIC-20 had little switches on each individual cartridge slot, so you could turn on or off the cartridge that was in that particular slot. This expansion chassis from Commodore itself doesn't have that. So if it's plugged in, it's active, and if you had conflicting cartridges, well, you know, you'd just have to juggle those manually. But, I mean, still... visually, this is an interesting thing in the way that it expands the expansion ports of the VIC-20 off to different places. It's also interesting to me that it has the CBM label on it, which was Commodore's more business-oriented.
Well, it sort of makes it labeling. Look like a VIC PET.
Like, yeah, cool. Yeah, exactly. It makes it like a hybrid.
The whole styling is in the you know, the previous, yeah, like the B series styling and sort of a thing.
So this will sell. It does indeed have the first bid, and it's got a long time to go, 6 days, so I'll be very interested. I guess if I was predicting, my wild guess would be this will go between somewhere $250 to $300 would be. Like I say, I've never seen one of these before. These has got to be totally rare.
Yeah, so. I've never heard of this at all.
Hey, the guy put a link to a VIC-20 denial or something, a discussion list, where he said, I just scored a brand new. And then in his link here, he said, I might put it up for sale, you know, in his discussion with some other people. And then, what's this, on April 10th, he's going, oh, person says, it belongs in a museum. He says, indeed, I'm thinking of giving it away to the IMUSI, which I think is the French museum.
Mm.
So I guess he's not going to do that.
Nah, it didn't work out.
He wants the money. I wish, though. He said he has like 3 VIC-20s. I wish he just had plugged one in and taken a picture of it.
Yeah.
Would it slid in place? That would have been.
Yeah. Although, if you go over to the denial and that other link that I posted in our show notes.
Oh. Okay. Sorry.
Does have information on this?
Yeah, they've got a great and it shows a picture of the inside. You can see how the cassette, the space to have the cassette in it. And
it's very cool.
Really, really interesting piece of hardware.
Cool. Yeah, if you Google it, there's a few pictures. I see. If you Google it, yeah, definitely.
And you see that Carrington where it was made for the Canadian market by Germans?
Well, who doesn't want to make things for the Canadian market? We're awesome. That means this is going to be sturdy and play hockey.
And able to tolerate temperature extremes. I think.
Indeed.
So yeah, that's I will not be bidding on this personally. I've got this sneaking suspicion. Easy for me to say. I think it's going to be too rich for my blood.
Maybe.
So you'll put all your money into bidding against me on Utopos instead.
We're all going to do that now.
Right. I already bought Utopos. It's mine for like 10 minutes.
You suck.
So, real quick round the table here, closing discussion. David, what's going on with you? How's your Historical Computing Society going?
Good. We just had a meeting yesterday, and it's growing slowly, but it's growing, so expect great things there. About to get together with the other officer of the group, so I think the time's coming now for us to come up with some appoint two other officers. And to come up with bylaws and sort of more formalize it. I mentioned last show too that we moved, right? My home, my family. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting in the new house here. So I think this room is pretty good for doing the podcast. So anyway, we're settled in here mostly. Still a lot of things to unpack. And
you said your book. Update on your book.
Yes, thankfully, I decided to go with doing a proof copy and to make sure everything was right. So there was just some things as a first timer with doing it's laid out and it's not laid out. It's laid out in InDesign and then it's finalized as PDF and then sent to the printer. Mm-hmm. And so some things just weren't right. And and then I had to import. See, the original magazines, newsletters, if you will, they were done in Quark Express. In a way earlier version of Quark Express, and I still have those files, and I tried to reopen them and kind of use those, but I'm missing a lot of the fonts and the original art, and it just would have been a nightmare to try to go that route. So ultimately what I decided to do was take the best copies I had. In a lot of cases, these were, you know, when they were copied off a copy machine or then printed, I had like the masters. That, you know, so let's say the ones that I pasted up were then made copies of and then later were printed. So basically I scanned those in at high resolution and then as JPEGs put them in as PDFs. So anyway, that's all. So I just had to kind of correct some things that weren't working right. So things wouldn't be cropped wrong. I had to maintain a 3/4 inch margin around every page. So I just had some of that wrong. But it's good. Yeah.
I'm sure people will appreciate the quality when that comes out. That's good you did that.
I think so. I'm happy with it. I think it's going to look good. And it's going to definitely be not perfect. And but you know what? The originals really weren't absolutely perfect either. So, for instance, a few pages, me holding up one of the final original pages and looking at it, on a few of them there's just barely a bit of bleed through from where it was printed on the other side. And so in scanning that in, it's a very high quality scan. So that page will look exactly like that original with just that barely bit of bleed through. So is that bad in one sense? Well, okay, I guess it's not. It's exactly the way the original one looked.
Well, that's not bad.
I think
so. Authentic.
Right. And it doesn't take away from, enjoying it and reading it or anything else. So, so that's it with me. My garage is totally full though, because in this other house I had some stuff in like the office, and I had some stuff in another room, and I totally got it out of the house because this house is a little bit smaller. So now the garage is just so crammed full of stuff I can barely get in there. So I gotta get rid of some stuff and organize. That's it.
Is it retro stuff or just stuff in general?
Some household stuff, but also a lot of the computer stuff. Excuse me. I'm gonna I've acquired some other stuff since, I moved to the Atlanta area, and I'm going to actually get a small storage room and put a bunch of stuff in there to give me room in the garage to better organize it. I have like 6 Commodore 64s and, I have duplicates of some things, and frankly, the Altair and the desk with 4 terminals takes up a lot of room, and I just need to kind of rework how to keep a lot of that stuff. And I'm going to try to, you know, maybe sell or give away some of the duplicate stuff because I just can't, you know, keep it.
I hear you. Same issue here. So, Carrington, what's going on your side of things?
Lots of games. Finished the next 1 MHz. I review Wizardry. First time I've ever played it in my life.
Well, that'll be good.
I got a copy of Wizardry and got to play that. Learned a lot about its history and things and a lot of magazine things. And Wizardry cheat programs and that kind of stuff. So all the history behind it was all totally new to me. So that was fun. And I got a new motorcycle recently. I've been enjoying the last of the riding season. So that's sort of coming to an end now, alas. Boo.
Well, and Blake, we really enjoyed having you on the show. Any parting shots?
Hey, well, I certainly had a great time, and I appreciate your asking me on. I guess my big thing coming up is, tied to Touch Arcade, we're trying to come out with a really big, nice iPhone native application, and we're working really hard to get that. We're actually also we've been trying for 2 years to get a new logo. Taito Space Invaders owners contacted us and were like, well, you know, you're using a Space Invader. And they contacted everybody. We officially, actually, they were pretty amenable. They let us license it. We've licensed it for free. But still, you know, it kind of underscored the fact that we kind of want to have our own thing. And so we've been going to great lengths to try to figure it out, but it's taken a great while. So before we launch this app in about 3-4 weeks, we're hoping to get a new logo and then a site redesign will come. So a lot of Touch Arcade stuff up ahead. I guess Byte Seller, I'll just keep on, you know, stuff I'm working on, keep on posting, and I'm glad that there are a few people out there reading, and you know, it's a lot of fun. And it's retro. The retro stuff is definitely a lot more fun than the typical day in, day out in the desktop scene. So I guess we all kind of feel that's the case.
Totally. So. Yeah, absolutely. And,
all right. Well,
go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, well, you know, and again, just thanks again for having me on. I'm a big fan of the show, and it's been great. I'll be listening for the long haul.
Yeah, this is gonna be a long show.
It is.
And thanks.
I think that's okay. I think that we had lots of good stuff.
And just for everybody listening, we had to rearrange to try to make sure we can make this happen. So I'm glad we were able to do that. We were able to, you know, make it work. So even though, you know, if it hadn't worked out, you'd be on the next show. But
okay. Well, yeah, it's glad it worked out. That's awesome.
Yeah, we almost forgot about you. Sorry about that.
That's all right. It happens all the time.
Yeah, it's definitely our pleasure having you here, Blake. And on my side, I guess I'll end with a complaint. I haven't had enough time to play with my retro stuff. You know, the hobby stuff, it's had to take a little bit of a back seat to some things going on with work and lots of stuff going on here at the house. I am, getting a chance to do one fun thing here. Stanford is offering a free course pretty much to all comers, anyone who wants to take it, on machine learning, you know, kind of applied artificial intelligence sort of stuff. And I'm going through that at the moment, trying to get my homework done. But I'm waking up some mathematics brain cells that are really kind of irritated at me for waking them up. You know, it's been probably 15 years since I had to even think about any of this stuff. But it's that's a lot of fun. So,
are you saying it's free online?
It's free. It's online. Oh. Yeah. And, I mean, you can actually work through the exercises, the review questions, the programming assignments, all that stuff. And you won't get a grade or that kind of thing or official credit, but you can go through the course. There's a lot of this stuff out there, but this one in particular caught my eye. So,
Very cool.
So anyway, yeah, that's what's up with me and enjoying the unseasonably warm weather here in Portland for as long as it lasts. So anyway, that's a wrap. Thanks, everyone, for listening and supporting the show. We appreciate it. Please tell a friend or two about it. And you can find all of the links that we discussed in the show notes. If you're a fan of the show, we'd like to ask you to do two things. First, we'd love to hear about it. So email the show at feedback@rcrpodcast.com. Also, You can help us by rating us and submitting a review on iTunes so more people will bump into us. And finally, you can follow us on Twitter, and our Twitter handle is @RCRPodcast.
I'm laughing, Earl, because I'm
calling that two things.
I'm thinking of Carrington's joke about my list of two things.
Okay.
But there's three.
Well, was that two? That was like more.
Yeah.
Oh. It's a part four of the trilogy. Right?
And number D. Right.
So, until next time. Retro computer.
Oh, wow,
that was terrible.
Yeah, do you want to do it?
Okay, ready.
Okay.
Until next time, retro computer. That was the most terrible. All right, we're not going to try that again. But tune in next time when we try and get this right. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.